welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington on this live broadcast from Studio 14. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Friday, May 5th, 2023. The United Nations appeals for $96 million US dollars for addressing a looming humanitarian crisis in South Sudan.
We currently have around 3,500 people per day arriving in South Sudan, and it is very true that the coming days and weeks will be very challenging, particularly at the border areas and particularly because of the rainy seasons.
And the Biden administration imposes sanctions on individuals and entities supporting the rival groups fighting in Sudan.
The move back to a sanctions regime, I think, is an important statement just by itself about how far Sudan has fallen.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Humanitarian agencies in South Sudan are appealing for $96 million US dollars for addressing a looming crisis in South Sudan. The UN's Deputy Humanitarian Coordinator in South Sudan says Sudanese and South Sudanese fleeing the conflict in Khartoum are in need of help. For VOA News, Manyang David Mayar reports from Juba.
United Nations Refugee Agency and the International Organization for Migration launched an emergency response plan on Thursday to address a looming humanitarian crisis due to the ongoing conflict in Sudan. Van der Auriet, the Deputy Humanitarian Coordinator in South Sudan, says the plan aims to support tens of thousands of South Sudanese fleeing the conflict in Sudan.
We currently have around 3,500 people per day arriving in South Sudan, and it is very true that the coming days and weeks will be very challenging, particularly at the border areas and particularly because of the rainy season starting as well. So the risk is that people will get stuck for longer periods of time in the border areas, and that we will see the humanitarian needs rising. And this is why it is very important that both the government and the international donors allocate additional resources so that we can help the people in need at the border areas.
According to the United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, or UN OCHA, more than 32,000 people, including South Sudanese, refugees and third country nationals, have arrived in South Sudan after fighting erupted in Khartoum last month. Auriet and the Minister of Humanitarian Affairs, Albino Akol Atak, led a high-level humanitarian and ministerial team to ring in Upper Nile State this week to assess the needs of Sudanese refugees and South Sudanese fleeing the conflict in Sudan. Auriet says a big number of South Sudanese and refugees who fled from different parts of Sudan are stranded at Paloch Airport.
The biggest challenge at the moment is how to make sure that the people who want to travel onwards to other places inside South Sudan, how can we organize and support this travel? People are flying from Paloch Airport. I think it's very important that the private sector in South Sudan and has been helping to get people out of Paloch to Juba and elsewhere. And also the church has already been helping with the boats.
The UN says additional funding will be used to assist returning South Sudanese and refugees for 6 months. The Deputy Humanitarian Coordinator says most of the people arriving from Sudan looked exhausted and traumatized.
People are also fearful for the future. You know, some of the younger people, South Sudanese, that are arriving, this is their first time to be in South Sudan. What will happen to their families? How will their kids get access to school? All of these questions are open for people and makes them, of course, fearful and anxious for the future. So that is really the first impression that you have when you go to the border area.
The United Nations said 180,000 South Sudanese are likely to return in the next 3 months, and 60,000 refugees are expected to arrive in the next 6 months if the conflict and tensions in Sudan persist. For VOA News, I'm Manyang David Mayor in Juba.
Still on Sudan, the U.S. President Joe Biden issued an executive order Thursday expanding the national emergency for Sudan and imposing sanctions on persons destabilizing and undermining the goal of a democratic transition in Sudan. VOA's Nabil Biagio spoke with Cameron Hudson, Senior Associate at the Center for Strategic and International Studies, to understand the significance of the move and its impact on the Sudan Armed Forces and the paramilitary rapid support forces.
The reestablishment of a sanctions regime against Sudan after so much effort over the last 5 years has been put on removing sanctions on Sudan, whether it was the comprehensive U.S. sanctions or the state-sponsored terrorism sanctions. The move back to a sanctions regime, I think, is an important statement just by itself about how far Sudan has fallen since the removal of President Bashir. It is an acknowledgement of the reality, which is the war on the ground, and a very comprehensive effort by parties to the conflict to undermine any future transition. So I think it's first and foremost a very sad statement of policy. But practically speaking, the sanction, it creates a law that allows the president to designate people for sanctioning under that law. But the sanction does not name any individual or entity to be sanctioned. So right now, there are still no new U.S. sanctions on individuals or corporations in Sudan. This is really just, I think, a warning of potential policy to come.
Yes, I noticed the lack of names, much to the frustration of the reader. No names, no people have been named, or entities even, in the executive order. What do you think is behind that?
Well, it's clearly a tactic that the Biden administration is using, and it's not the first time they've used it. People should recall that 2 years ago, we wrote a very similar executive order for the war in the Tigray region of Ethiopia, creating a sanctions regime to punish those people who were committing war crimes and atrocities and who were undermining a peace process there. People should also recall that no one was added to the list of sanctions. No one, even though more than 300,000 people died in that conflict, we never employed that sanctions regime that we put in place. And so I think that, Sudanese officials might look at this and not be terribly moved or concerned, given the recent history of the Biden administration to threaten the use of sanctions and then to not follow through.
So basically, you're saying this move is not enough to change the behavior of the warring parties in Sudan or restrain them?
Well, it's a warning. It's a warning, and it's clearly, the administration has left itself plenty of room to ratchet up the pressure. But I don't think that this sanctions regime by itself is actually any significant pressure on the parties. I think if people had been identified, if entities, if money had been stopped, if anything practical had been imposed on either of the parties, I think that might cause them to rethink their current approach. But this right now, it really doesn't, in my view.
That's Cameron Hudson, Senior Associate at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. He spoke with my colleague Nabil Biagio on Thursday. Some media practitioners in South Sudan are accusing the government and security agencies of threatening, intimidating, and detaining journalists. But South Sudan's government spokesperson insists there is press freedom in the country. For VOA News, Dengai Deng reports from Bor.
Peter Goch Anyang, a resident of Jonglei State, says citizens are prohibited from discussing certain topics, adding that the government agents interfere, control media companies, or intimidate individual journalists. Goch says newspapers, online news outlets, and the electronic media should operate without interferences.
Journalists are not free to inform the public about development in the country, as they don't have access to information. For sure, the government need to do what is possible to make sure that freedom of press is allowed in South Sudan by giving journalists access to information such that they can be equally shared with the public. Freedom of press is paramount to citizens because it allows people to express their views and make the abuse out by the state government. So press is a voice to the voiceless.
Susan Gitao is the chief editor of the Juba-based Classic FM. She says one of her reporters was assaulted by a bodyguard of a high-profile leader while on assignment. Gitao says many journalists across South Sudan have experienced a similar ordeal.
Press freedom is still limited in South Sudan. Intimidation, threats, censorship, these are major challenges of press freedom in the country. The ability of journalists to report freely on matters of public interest remains a challenge. In my view, I believe that there are people who still do not understand the role of media because maybe they think journalists are nagging when in real sense they are just doing their job.
South Sudan's Information Minister Michael Makwei insists there is freedom of the press in his country.
Here in South Sudan, there is absolute freedom of press, and this is why everybody is talking as he wishes. Every radio is talking at will. Everybody is sending messages and saying all that he has in mind in the social media, and we have not been interfering with them. What else do they want? South Sudan is one of the leading institutions in terms of the freedom of journalism. Those who say so, I'm sure, even in their own countries, such freedoms are not there, whether it's from the west or from the east, from the north or from the south.
John Hulu, the manager of Juba-based Top FM, says he disagrees with Makwei, adding that journalists in South Sudan have no access to information from public institutions. Hulu says it is not easy to get information from President Salva Kiir's office.
There is no press freedom in South Sudan. Example, like head of state of South Sudan, I've never seen him one time being interviewed by a South Sudanese journalist. Press freedom is when newspapers, radio station, and other media industry are operating in the country without fear. But if some of the media in the country are operating outside the country because of the fear, they don't even need to show up themselves. It means there is no press freedom in the country.
South Sudan's ranks 128th and Sudan ranks 151st. Out of 180 countries, Reporters Without Borders annual World Press Freedom Index. For VOA News, I am Dengai Deng in Bor.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, an Ethiopian journalist who fled his country to the United States talks about the future of journalism in Ethiopia. Find out more after the break. You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. As we continue to mark World Press Freedom Day this week, an Ethiopian journalist, Tamarat Nagera, says conflict in his home country has affected press freedom and created a hostile environment where civic rights are repeatedly violated. Nagera had to flee his country twice, first during the Malesi Zenawi administration and again during the Karen Abiy administration. He was speaking at the National Press Club in Washington on Wednesday, where he shared his story along with other journalists who had to flee their homes because of their work. Nabil Biagio spoke to him about the impact of conflict on freedom of expression in his country.
While everybody is happy that we do not have an active war in northern Ethiopia like we did a year ago, there are still conflicts in many parts of Ethiopia, in Amhara region, in Oromia region, but we don't have the level of conflict we had a year or two ago. While that's a good news, it's not all a good news for Ethiopians because the focus of the peace negotiation have made press freedom for journalists and media, a backstory rather than front and center of the story. And the international community almost have ignored journalists that are being imprisoned, activists that are being imprisoned, officers that are being imprisoned, because the focus is now on the peace negotiation, delivering aid to the displaced millions through the conflict and through this transition. That's one thing. The other thing is, it's very sad for many Ethiopians who were very, very hopeful about the transition, were very hopeful about the reforms that Prime Minister Meles Zenawi and his team promised. And after having this unnecessary war, millions displaced, hundreds of thousands dead, Ethiopia is back to square one, almost even at the next state than we were in terms of stability, peace, transition to democracy and political order.
Yes, you mentioned Meles Zenawi. I assume you meant Abiy Ahmed, the current prime minister.
No, I mean previously, yes. Meles Zenawi, yes, but on current state, Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed promised a lot of, not just Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed, but his team. And the OPDO leadership promised a lot of change in Ethiopia. And that's what the reason hundreds, if not thousands, returned to Ethiopia like me and started either our job, politics, or life. It's sad to see Ethiopia become what it is now today.
And just quickly, what is your next step?
I will personally restart the media that was on hold, and then try to engage the ideals of Ethiopia that Ethiopians can live together beyond ethnicity or religion or any other kind of difference.
From the diaspora.
Yes.
That's Tamrat Nagara, Ethiopian journalist and founder of the Ethiopia based media company Tarara Network. He was speaking with my colleague Nabil Biagio at the National Press Club here in Washington, D.C. on Wednesday. A 10-year-old South Sudanese girl has launched a campaign to plant 100 trees in Juba. Rita Joy Samatha planted 30 trees on the premises of the South Sudan Revenue Authority in Juba on Thursday. The Deputy Commissioner of the National Revenue Authority, Africano Mande, says South Sudanese should plant more trees to protect the environment from the effects of climate change. For VOA News, Juliana Shiapai has more from Juba.
10 years old Rita Joy Samantha Buck represented South Sudan in the Little Miss Africa competition held in South Africa this year and emerged the second runners-up. She was also chosen as the Little Miss Environment Ambassador. Rita says she hopes South Sudanese will join her in planting trees around Juba town to protect the environment in South Sudan. Rita planted 31 trees at the compound of the National Revenue Authority on Thursday. She says residents of Juba town will benefit from her tree planting exercise.
I chose planting trees because I think Juba does not have enough rainfall because there are not enough trees. My goal is to plant 100 trees before World Environment Day, which is on the 5th of June. And I hope all of you can help me with that. Planting trees is the way to reduce the effect of industrial pollution in our country. The National Revenue Authority today is giving back to the community through this act to preserve our environment. This is where the taxes are going, to preserve our environment.
Africano Mande, the Deputy Commissioner General of the National Revenue Authority, says the Taxpayers Education Department will support Rita to achieve her dream.
They are not a substitute to the Minister of Environment. But we are saying that climate and the issues of environment cuts across the board, and nobody is going to escape. All of us have to take the responsibility. So for us, we are not wasting time. We just want to start by planting. And I believe as the National Revenue Authority, we will start planting from here and walk out of here and plant till we are told stop.
Daniel Kon Ater, the Acting Commissioner for Corporate Service at the National Revenue Authority, says Rita's initiative to plant trees is inspiring, adding that South Sudanese should support her.
Lacking praise is a responsibility for each and every citizen in this country. If our little girl has decided to share us with the fathers, the mothers, the brothers, the aunties, the sisters, that it is important, regardless of your age, to be able to do something that will help the current and the future generation to come. Appreciation also is still going back to our Deputy Commissioner General, because he's a person who has got an eye out there to make sure something that is good is done in this country.
Rita's mother, Salwa Susie, who is a relationship coach, says her primary 6-year-old daughter is on school break. Susie says she will help her daughter to plant 100 trees in offices, schools, and orphanages around Juba.
Rita is very, very passionate about environment and also helping orphan children. The orphan children thing comes in because it's a part of our tradition as a family, that even with my mom and even with us as the children, we always did orphan visits. We went to orphanages and were able to interact with orphans. I am an orphan myself, so I take pride in going out to help the less privileged. And I try to put that into Rita, and she's very, very into it.
Salwa and Rita have so far planted 31 trees. They are appealing to the other government institutions, non-profits, schools and orphanages around Juba to allow them to plant trees in their compounds as one way of helping Rita achieve her dream of planting 100 trees in Juba before the World Environment Day on June 5th. For VOA News, I am Juliana Shiapai in Juba.
We'd love to hear your remarks on some of the stories in this broadcast. My colleague Nabil Biagio is ready with this week's listener comments. Over to you, Nabil.
Thank you, John. This South Sudan in Focus fan says, "Hey, VOA and all the team. I'm Molana Kirdawa Doom from the University of Juba. I was disappointed yesterday when I found out that the police authorities are abusing the law in Gumbo prison service. How come for accused persons of minor cases to be jailed for a length of time without investigation, food, water, and other things? What we need to know is that there are some cases that should be solved at the family level." Jacob Dior Machueng from Ural Ilixit says, "I was impressed how many journalists in South Sudan expressed themselves on World Press Freedom Day. To me, that day reminds us of our struggle to shape the world, the suffering that journalists are going through, especially in this country. In my opinion, press should be considered as a mirror in which we see ourselves either positive or negative." Mabor Aladrengo in Rumbek Ilixit says, "Hello, John Tanza. Happy World Press Freedom Day. My message to the government is that don't mistreat journalists. Let them do their work in a free space. Remember, a world without information is like a blind man being stuck in the desert without support. Information is power. Therefore, we need journalists to update us with valid news free from intimidation." Mal Adao Mal, who says he's in Washington State, Seattle, says, "Hello, VOA South Sudan in Focus. Please allow me to say journalists around the globe are doing the significant task of updating the public on current affairs, especially those working for South Sudanese media houses, and the government should be told not to intimidate them because they're not criminals. They're our eyes. May God bless all journalists. Thanks." Saber Aiza Khamis in Yambio town of Western Equatorial State says, "Hello, Nabil and John. The political wrangles in Sudan have escalated into an ugly situation that needs both the AU and the international community to mount pressure on the two warring leaders in Sudan to cease hostilities by all means. Just to save the country from destruction and human displacement, General Dagalo and Burhan must be accountable for the losses taking place in Sudan. I suggest that if both are not ready to own the ceasefire, let external forces intervene to arrest the situation. Otherwise, innocent people are finishing in Sudan, unless if both the AU and the international community feel happy to see lives being lost in Sudan. Thanks." This fan says, "Good evening, VOA.
I am Charles Pascali, the chairperson of South Sudan Blind Football Association. Blind football intercompetition has just been concluded, in which the final will be this month. Peter Goj Anyang Majongdul in Block 3 in Bortown says, as the world celebrates Press Freedom Day this week, I urge the media authority to fight enough for the freedom of journalists to make them free to access information across South Sudan. Asega Ludanga from DRC Congo says, hello VOA Africa. My message is I'm appealing to the international community to address the conflict in Sudan to avoid the suffering of the Sudanese people. Thanks VOA journalists for your updates. This listener says, dear John Tanz and Nabil Biagio, I wish the military warring parties in Sudan uphold the ceasefire and comply with IGAD proposals based on African solutions to African problems for a durable solution to this destructive conflict and a peaceful political transition in the country. Manding Malwal Alwong in Juba says, today I am remembering all our journalists operating in the country and abroad for their zeal, commitment and dedication to this beautiful country. And for those who lost their lives in the line of duty, they didn't die in vain. They left a legacy and took part in the foundation of the nation building. And for those who are still practicing journalism in this difficult environment where illegal detentions, censorship, kidnapping and harassment have been in practice from time to time from these violators of press freedom, don't give up. Keep pushing for the country you want to see for yourself, your children and your grandchildren. This fan says, hi, Voice of America. This is Jonathan Chol from Uganda. Thank you so much for the update on what is going on in South Sudan and around the globe. Keep it up and may God bless your work. And finally, James Madingola Kej in Juba, South Sudan says, any violent war, whatever the scale, no any party can win. General Hemeti and General Burhan have done enough destruction of lives and property. They should now give peace a chance for the sake of the remaining few lives. The views expressed here do not reflect the views of VOA or of this program. We appreciate hearing from all of you. Keep those comments coming.
And I will repeat, keep your texts and voice messages brief, and we shall sample some of them every Friday. Our WhatsApp number is +1 202 630 8011. And that's all we prepared for you this Friday. We now leave you in a dancing mood with the song I Am Not Sober by Jamnazi Africa. Been listening to Jamnazi Africa and the song I'm Not Sober. I'm your host John Tanza on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. Don't forget to visit voaafrica.com for all your favorite programs and news updates. If you missed this program, go to www.voaafrica.com/South Sudan. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Peter, we wish you a good evening. Remember to join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Constructor.